The harm that comes from too much cell phone time, especially for young people, has become much clearer in recent years. So much so that the U.S. Surgeon General is calling for warning labels on social media platforms similar to the warnings on cigarettes and alcohol because of what he called a youth mental health crisis. Education leaders are grappling with how to keep kids focused during the school day. Should cell phones be banned in school? And if so, what should those bans look like? We'll discuss it today on Talk of Alaska.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
From Alaska Public Media, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. It's been a long time since calling home during the school day meant a trip to the office to use the phone, usually on the receptionist's desk. Now, cell phones are everywhere. Teens love them, but as more research points to higher levels of depression, anxiety, and isolation resulting from too much phone and internet time, school districts are working on policies to restrict phone use during the school day. What is in place in Alaska schools now, and how might it change in the future? Joining us to discuss the policies currently in place are Dr. Luke Allman, the principal of South High School. Also in the studio with us today is Dr. Susan Beasley, a pediatric behavioral health pediatrician at Mindful Growth Alaska. And Kelly Lessons is here in the studio with us. Kelly is an Anchorage School Board member representing her own thoughts today, not the school board. Welcome, all of you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
So I want to start here with you, Dr. Allman, Luke. South has had a policy in place for 2 years. It changed this year. Tell us how you started and why, and what changed in your policy this school year.
Right. So, you're correct. 2 years ago, we went to a slightly more restrictive policy, and then this year, just one degree more. So let me go back to last year, and then I'll move forward from there. Last year, we essentially said by default that no cell phones would be used in classrooms. So you're assuming if you're a student, you walk into the classroom, it should not be present. However, we did allow teachers who had a curricular use for that phone. For instance, you might be using a graphing calculator function on your phone instead of the actual calculator to do that last year. So clearly curricular use. Whereas this year we said no phones are involved in instruction at all. So the step forward was a greater restriction of the cell phone's role in learning. And we also eliminated, ideally, the possibility that a student would be using a phone at all during a class period or if they left the classroom or anywhere in the school, so that really instructional time was absolutely sacred. So the subtle difference is just a slight restriction on the curricular use and then no use outside of the classroom or inside while class is in session.
Luke, the Surgeon General warned that social media can carry, and this is his quote, a profound risk of harm to the mental health and well-being of children and adolescents. What have you seen in the behavior of students that prompted the cell phone policy that you put in use?
Yeah, so I'll go back a little ways for that, too. When we came back from remote learning, we found that kids were, for obvious reasons, very, very dependent on screens at home in order to connect to educators. And those students who had less contact with screens at home had a much easier time transitioning back. So I guess I would start with the harm of not being able to have just a human conversation if you are constantly dependent on electronics because you can shut people off or mute them, right? And you can't do that in real life. So we want to teach kids good communication skills. And then past that, if you don't have some degree of restriction or you're not teaching appropriate use, sometimes social media can become a battle of who can be the most outrageous. And we don't always want a record of every single thing a teenager does through their entire teenage years to be on film or on social media from now until whenever that company goes defunct. So we thought it was wise to both teach kids to interact at a very human level, learn to, I guess, mediate disagreements without shutting people off, and also to be able to focus on their learning while they were in the classrooms and even in the hallways. And we've seen just a growing incidence of face-to-face conversation, even when our kids can use their phones. So I think there's a residual effect from the restrictions in the classroom.
It sounds like great improvements that you've seen. I remember maybe, I don't know how many years ago, the first time I walked into a cafe and saw a group of teenagers sitting in a booth, not saying anything. Mm-hmm. They were all texting, and I stopped. It was the oddest thing to observe, to see what should have been a raucous crowd of, you know, noisy, lively teenagers, and they were all just sitting there texting away. And I thought, I don't like the looks of that. Something about it really hit me the wrong way. And I wondered, are we going to evolve into the future to have just giant thumbs and no vocal cords? I mean, it was alarming to me, and it's certainly gotten more pronounced since that time. Kelly, what prompted you to start thinking about the school cell phone policies yourself?
Sure, that's a great question. I think as a school board member, and as a mom, and as a community member, I wear many hats. And starting with my role as, you know, a mom, I guess, first and foremost, and a community member, I think back to, the many years that I have walked my now oldest 13-year-old to the bus stop. And there would be mornings where we were there early, and the kids would just play in the cul-de-sac. And there was one day when an older student, maybe fifth or sixth grade, got a cell phone. Mm. And as soon as that student received the cell phone, she was checked out. She was not playing with the other kids in the cul-de-sac. And as a neighbor at that point in time, I thought, that just doesn't feel very comfortable to me. That doesn't seem right. COVID happened. I ran for school board. I think about a week into my tenure on the school board, I first visited South High School. I've learned a lot from Dr. Allman and our other instructional leaders. And really, I ran for the school board, and I really try to focus my service on the board to improve our learning conditions by prioritizing student wellness. So I feel like this fits into my overall intention. Over the past couple of years, I think tracking with what Dr. Allman has shared, board members have received really a steady stream of input from community members, from teachers, from parents, from medical professionals and specialists, saying that they've, you know, watched the changes that have been occurring over a long period of time. They're concerned about bullying. They're concerned about students' attention. So how do I take that public input and translate that into a policy? Well, you know, I started by thinking at the start of the summer, when I had a little bit more bandwidth, you know, what is our current policy? And it turns out that the Anchorage School District does have a current board policy in our policy manual. You know, policies essentially are the what for the district's how. So that policy is number 5138, and it dates back to about 2012. Mm-hmm. So if you read it, you think, this sounds a little out of date. Like, there are new technologies and devices like earbuds and AirPods and smartwatches, which I would wager many of your students have, you know, at South High School and around the district and across the state. Maybe we should figure out how to address the overall presence and prevalence of devices which communicate. And so the current policy is called something to the effect of portable electronic devices. Mm-hmm. We also have district-supplied Chromebooks, which is another sort of thing to think about. So I spent a lot of time considering the world of electronic devices which communicate, and beginning to explore the process of drafting something that feels a little bit more in the 21st century, that would prioritize student learning. And maybe just as a general aside, the process for revising a board policy generally involves a board member taking an idea, running it by maybe another board member, certainly running it by the administration to say, hey, you know, superintendent, how does this feel from your perspective? What do you know from the perspective of maybe special education or IT or English language learners or students who are deaf? You know, those are some of the things that I'm thinking about. You know, how would implementing a policy that looks like this be from your perspective. So it's kind of where I am right now in the process. I've drafted a policy revision. I've given it to the administration. We've had one a really good conversation. They're doing some work on their end. I have a follow-up meeting, actually, I think next week. And then I'm hoping to be able to take that collaborative product to our board governance committee so other board members will have a chance to weigh in on it. And then, assuming the board governance committee feels good about it, they would then pass it on to the board as a whole. It would then become a non-action item so members of the public can read it, see it, sure, have a chance to weigh in on it, and then it becomes an action item that gets voted on.
Well, thank you for breaking that down for us and explaining that process. If you're just joining us, we're talking about cell phone policies in Alaska schools, what is in place currently, what may be coming, and what your thoughts are. We'd love to hear from you. If you are in a school district that does have restrictions in place now, let us know about those. If you restrict your own child's use of phones during the school day, tell us what your personal policies are. In the studio with me today is Dr. Luke Allman, the principal of South High School in Anchorage. Dr. Susan Beasley is a pediatric behavioral health pediatrician at Mindful Growth Alaska. And Kelly Lessons is an Anchorage school board member in the studio with us today. Dr. Beasley, Susan, turning to you, what are your thoughts about the new restrictions on phone use in schools? What do you think is reasonable and best for successful learning?
Yeah, thanks, Lori. I support the direction that we're moving towards more restrictions, and I would even take it a step further. I think that ideally we would have a bell-to-bell restriction from phone use, and that's for a couple of reasons. One is that really, we're talking about attention fragmentation. And if we have kids with phones that are, you know, just in a pocket or restricted, but still sort of with a student during class, and there's some, you know, notifications coming through, which, you know, one study showed that the average teen gets about 192 notifications daily. So that's a notification every 5 minutes. And that's just sort of average users. So if you think about heavy users, that's more like one notification per minute. And so even if we have a restriction that no use during class, but that phone is still present on a child's body or in a backpack and you can hear a buzz, that's going to create a fragmentation of attention. And that's going to be incredibly disruptive. You know, we know that paying attention is incredibly important for learning, obviously. And it's also a learned skill that requires practice. And historically, school's the perfect place for daily practice of sustained attention. And even if the notification isn't checked, that fragmentation's going to have significant impacts on learning. And there's actually been a study on this topic specifically, and it showed that teens that even without interacting with their phones, the mere presence of the phone on their body or on a desk or close to them show decreased performance in tasks of fluid intelligence and working memory compared with control kids whose phones were in a different room. Mm.
And so that is really a dramatic example of just so they're just distracted by the notion of somebody's trying to get in touch with me or there might be something really cool that I should be looking at right now.
Right.
Is there a relationship between that and like anxiety and cortisol levels?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, what we're talking about here, it relates to the same pathways in the brain that are involved with any sort of addictive behavior. And social media and phone use, they hit on our pleasure center in our brains, which activate dopamine circuits, and this is our reward pathways. And so, for example, like I might eat a potato chip, and I'll enjoy that, get a little dopamine hit in my brain. But instead of feeling satisfied with that, then I'm going to immediately cycle into a wanting of another potato chip. And that just keeps going. And, you know, it's not the child's fault that this is happening. This is just how we're designed. And if you add that system to, you know, a frontal lobe, which is the part of our brain that's the last to develop, not fully formed until mid-20s, and is also responsible for impulse control, then it's sort of a setup for for difficulty to not continue to engage. And it's almost like these companies are preying on that very specific vulnerability to link us to continually checking or engaging with this. And then what's more is that it can lead to altered circuitry over time, which will decrease dopamine, you know, chronically, and can increase cortisol, leading to stress response, and lead to anxiety and irritability and anger, emotional reactivity,
nothing
and
good,
depression. Right? Yeah, it's sort of scary, really.
You're a mom of three and a pediatrician focused on behavioral health. Phones aren't inherently bad, even for teenagers. So how do you think about the trade-offs between letting teens use phones but making sure the right limits are in place?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's not one formula that's going to work for each family, but it is something that needs to be a collaborative process. And the way that I've approached it in my family is as sort of a family meeting to first start with, well, what are our values? And, you know, you can think about, well, what are the media benefits? Because, you know, we live in a media world. We're not going to just go back to, you know, not having any access. And we shouldn't. There are, you know, great, you know, access and connections that can be made through our media now. So what do we want from this media? And then what are the draws that lead to, you know, the more difficult or challenging behaviors? And then, you know, there might be some ground rules, like, are there specific times of day when everybody should be media free? Mm. Like maybe an hour before bed, an hour after we wake up, mealtime, certain parts of the house where we just don't want to see anybody's media. And, you know, this is right now targeted towards children, but really this is should be a collaborative process of limiting and just bringing awareness to habits for every person in the household.
Maybe you could have one room that's old school media, like books, and that's the only communication device that is in that particular part of the house. You set your household rule is no phone before 13. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of where we started. My oldest is 15, and we sort of said, well, minimum age whether we'd start talking about having a phone is 13.
And how did you come up with that particular age?
I mean, I think we just thought that really the longer we could delay, the better. And by that point, it was sort of on the cusp of eighth grade. So we sort of made it part of the way through middle school. And at that point, it became a little bit of a sort of situation where almost every other person was already connected. And so that was a piece of it, of just wanting to allow our child to then be connected. And that was a piece of it, but also just thinking about like maturity, ability to handle, ability to be in communication with us about limits. And that's what we've worked with so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you for that. Let's go to the phones for a moment. John is in Anchorage. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Did you have a question or
a
comment?
I would really like to know what the school district is doing at large with educating their students about this problem of media and access to media, basically a broader perspective in terms of their personal life, their family experiences, and why, and letting them know what the problems are with this so that they are aware of the issues. And I was wondering, is there any change in curriculum that allow development of personal interaction between students on a regular basis rather than simply having them sit there in a mindless presentation by the instructor? So anyway, those are my issues with regards to this whole problem. And I think that we need to have people interacting more right immediately in their school situation. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Lots of thoughts there. I saw you nodding, Kelly and Luke. So, Kelly, you want to start us off?
Great. Wonderful question. What immediately comes to mind is my understanding that this year, with the pivot of sixth graders to middle school, I believe that all sixth graders are getting kind of a digital literacy course. I could be wrong, but I believe that there is about a quarter of their year that's going to be focused on that. I would defer to, at a granular level, especially in high school, to Dr. Allman. But I would say that, you know, our staff are using, you know, devices to deliver curricular material at an early level. I have two children. I've seen both of them. My youngest is in elementary school. You know, they're using Google Docs collaboratively, using Google Slides. They're learning how to handle digital products at a young age. Maybe I'll pivot and let respond.
Please do. And to John's point, this idea of, you know, teaching basic 101 social interaction skills.
Right. I think I'll pick up where Kelly left off. I think years ago I taught digital composition and we started that class, which is still a high school English elective, with digital ethics, which are, I think, equally applicable today. And that fell into three broad categories, which was privacy, i.e., are you paying attention to your privacy and are you violating someone else's, and be aware of that. Property, and I'm old enough to remember Napster, when you could share songs all over the place and violate copyright. So that was kind of the property part of it. That's changed because we have more modern technology now. And then I think the broad category of appropriate use is where we talk to kids most often. So what is appropriate use of your device? That is taught, I think, in classrooms many, many times, especially with the Chromebooks that we have, because a lot of the learning platforms that provide content, which is a very cheap way to provide content, is digital. So those conversations are naturally taking place in our classrooms as those technologies are being used or restricted, just to answer for our kids why we're doing it. And then to the larger question about instructional techniques, I was mentioning before we came on air that it's really been our approach this year to go back to an analog learning environment, because we know that that still works and our brain structures are still ancient, right? They don't keep up with 21st century technology. And I've said in my newsletter, we haven't found a computer chip yet that we can put in your brain and download all of the information that you get in a K-12 education. And we certainly couldn't do that for what it means to be human, interact with people, moderate disagreements, cite evidence, have principled disagreement. So much of what we're trying to teach our kids, because of the phone restriction and also our emphasis on in-person instruction, discussion, reading and writing, is just to solidify those skills that we know from time immemorial have been very, very important to be a successful member of a community. And we've seen some real benefits to that. I think it feels like a more grounded, peaceful, and safe place for students. And they may not have liked it when we started because we were removing that dopamine hit that they get. And then I would just build on Dr. Beasley's notes and say that you get the good chemicals from interacting with real human beings. So Absolutely. The serotonin and the oxytocin and what you get from being a generous human being or someone who is just connected in a real conversation like we're having right now, it is good for you. It's very human to do those things. And we want our kids to have those experiences as part of their learning process.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. And I want to go to the phones for a moment and then I'll come back to you, Dr. Beasley. Joshua is in Anchorage. Hello.
Yeah, hello. I've got two 12-year-old daughters and I've got a 6-year-old. So I'm jumping right into this because I have a little bit to say. Early on, we've never had a television in our family. We tried to keep that out. And exposure to screen time for our 12-year-olds when they're young was... Well, it was none for them. They just didn't have any screen time when they were toddlers up to the age of 4 years old, I think, was when we started watching movies with them. And so that was interesting to see how that affected their attention in the real world, especially when it came to reaction to other screens, right? You'd go to a Super Bowl party, and which we did every year with the friends, and our daughters would have no interest in the television. This wasn't something they were used to looking at. They'd walk around, they'd play, they'd interact, but had no interest in staring at TV. Actually, one incident, we were flying overseas, super upset, jet lagged, 2 years old, trying to calm down with anything we can. Like, here, let's try putting on a movie. Didn't outwork at all, right? Had no interest in it. Come first grade, they do an assessment, draw a tree, a house, and a person. And the teacher, she looks at it, she shows it to us, and she says, this child has never watched television, right? So just the effects on the child's imagination was clear, right, from 3 years of lack of screen time. Now, we've got a six-year-old now, and when she was very young, I went away for school for 6 months. I was out of state, living out of state for 6 months. And so my interaction with my family was through Zoom. And this was from the age my youngest was 3 months old to 9 months old. And so every day they'd all get on the screen, stare at the screen, and it was Papa. And so what we see following that, what I attribute to that, is that my youngest has always been fixated on screens, right? You turn on a screen anywhere around her, and she just becomes locked on it.
Fascinating.
Kind of makes it difficult to go to a restaurant, actually, because it used to be with our younger girls, you know, we'll just move away from the screens that are in the restaurant because they're distracting, you know. But with this one, it's you physically have to face her to a wall, and still have to tell her constantly, please stop turning around and staring at the TV.
That is such a profound example in one family of your different experiences, and really some clear guidance, I think, for folks. Kelly.
Yeah, I just wanted to share, you know, thank you so much for sharing that. We certainly get a lot of stories coming into the board. You know, you hear anecdotes about kids who are not familiar with the paper and weight and function of a book when they come into kindergarten. I'm interested in kindergarten readiness. And instead, they're maybe moving their fingers over a page as if they're swiping, right? You know how to swipe from right to left. And this is something that, you know, a kindergarten teacher, you know, has relayed to me.
Mm. Just yikes.
Other anecdotes.
Yeah. I wanted to go to you, Susan.
Yeah,
you
I think what you're
there.
Hitting on there is the opportunity cost. You know, if we are spending so much time on media in whatever form, whether it's TV, social media, gaming, or a different modality, then the real question is, well, what are we missing? You know, what connections or relationships are we not making? What skills are we not developing? What exposures or what activities are we missing out on? And a big one that you're maybe describing, Kelly, is sort of foundational lack of time with play. And we know that, you know, for a child, play is essential for development and the social depravity also. You know, when we are lacking the face-to-face time, then, you know, we're depriving kids of essential synchronous and face-to-face physical and social interactions that are essential for human development and connection.
Absolutely. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion about cell phone policies in schools and what seems to be the right fit for families and for schools and for students as Talk of Alaska continues statewide. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing cell phone policies in school and how to keep kids safe from too much exposure to life online. In the studio with me today is Dr. Luke Allman, the South High School principal here in Anchorage. And also with us today is Kelly Lessons, an Anchorage School Board member. And Dr. Susan Beasley is a pediatric behavioral health pediatrician at Mindful Growth Alaska. Luke, I want to turn back to you. You have students store their phones in a common area. How has that worked out logistically?
So we do. So as class begins, we really focused on what is your first 5 minutes to set the tone for learning. And part of that first 5 minutes, what I ask all of my staff to do was to develop a routine that they could coach students on for about the first week of school to put the phone away. And sometimes that's part of an attendance mechanism because they put them in a grid pattern, and that grid pattern could resemble the seating arrangement in the room. And so it also makes attendance more efficient. Of course, not every kid brings a phone to school, so there has to be a little bit of awareness of that. So that's one example, but we really, really focus on how to set the tone for learning in that first 5 minutes. So that's probably the quick routine of you put your phone up, you get your materials out, and then there is an opening task for you to transition into the learning. And then similarly, at the end of the class period, we have to have a routine of ending the class period. And I've always encouraged all of my teachers to take a moment to allow kids to reflect on their learning so that hopefully they can anchor that learning in memory and then be very thoughtful about their transition outside of the classroom. And so usually those phone holders are hanging behind the teacher's desk because there's some degree of security concern. And then students, as they walk toward the door, part of their departure is grabbing their phone before they walk into the hallway and then go to their next class or to lunch, depending on the time of day.
You considered restricting phone use to only allowing it right before lunch, and then students would get their phones back at the end of the day. Talk about the difficulty in the logistics of trying to implement something like that, and then how you ultimately came to the policy you have now.
Right. To some degree, our policy is, I think, as restrictive as it can be while also being pragmatic. There are about 1,250 students in our high school. We have approximately 50 teachers, 3 administrators, and 3 security people that kind of pay attention to passing periods. So I always joke, we're just outnumbered at some point. It would be very difficult to completely restrict phone use during passing periods. And then we also have an open campus lunch, and so does every other high school in Anchorage. So there is some degree of safety concern there. I mean, one good use of a cell phone is if you happen to get in an accident or you really need help, then you can make a phone call. So I would really like, if we went any more restrictive, to just have sacred morning time from our first bell to the bell before lunch and then the bell after lunch until whenever the student leaves the school. But again, the challenge is passing periods. And I didn't think that going to a locked pouch system was very feasible. I mean, it takes a long time to close those and open them up. And surprise, surprise, you can YouTube how to pick one and figure out how to get it open in no time. So if we left those pouches on students, there would be ways to get into them if they wanted to. So we, I think, took the middle ground approach, which is we need to both teach students how to use their phones wisely and also do restriction during our class time. And for right now, it's working pretty well for us. And I think most other high schools in the district right now are following a fairly similar model with just a few adjustments based on their personnel and their unique needs in their building.
Kelly, yes.
Yeah, I was going to build on that. One of the things that came to my attention, I think late spring, early summer, was, you know, the existence of these Yonder pouches as one, maybe one company that makes them. And I thought, okay, we've got 43,000 kids in the district. Maybe 2/3 of them have cell phones. All of a sudden, that is there's a dollar figure to purchasing the cell phones, in addition to the daily logistics and the likelihood that students are going to be picking them. So sort of the impracticality of that at a large level dissuaded me from incorporating that into a revision of the board's policy. I will say that, you know, the current South policy has been deeply informative for me for maybe showing one direction it could take. I think that, you know, again, I'm still waiting for administrative input, but in my mind, it would be very important for a board policy to allow students to bring their device or devices to school, because there are certainly safety security concerns getting to and from school, use them before and after the school day, but require their placement in a locker, if it's available, or a designated alternative space during that instructional day, and to allow for exceptions, as Luke alluded, for lunch for grades 9 through 12. And I really am learning again from our instructional leaders. In most of our middle schools, both last year and this year, they've pivoted to an off and away all day policy. And I think that they're not driving. They don't have open lunches. And I don't think that they're really, I think it's a great policy. And I say that as a board member and as a mom. I have an eighth grader. I drive carpool. I bring 5 or so kiddos to school many mornings. And the eighth graders in the carpool have shared that as a result of the off and away policy implemented this year in middle school, lunches are a lot louder. And I'm thinking, that's great.
I love that.
I mean, maybe there's a decibel issue to contend with, but the point is that students are talking to each other. And I think that's a wonderful thing, right? That's bringing about those human connections. They're learning to engage. They're practicing fundamental skills.
Social skills.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So I'd like to see in whatever policy that the board passes some nuance between, you know, elementary and middle school, where I think there's no reason for a device to be on a playground or available during the school day. And, you know, high school, where students maybe going off campus, and need to learn how to regulate their behavior.
That's the other important issue, correct? Is they're soon going to be adults, and then
right.
no one will be able to say, hey, you're grounded if you're using your phone
yeah.
too much. So they have to sort of get to a place where they can regulate on their own.
And I would go back to the idea of the cost or opportunity cost. What are you giving up if you're using a phone that's not aligned to a learning task or to communicating with someone? Because I think those are appropriate uses we use them for. And I always encourage kids and even the adults to do an audit. I mean, most phones will tell you how long you spend in terms of minutes on every app. And I just uploaded the new operating system to my iPhone, and I put my number of screen minutes on my home screen, which I look at fairly often because I check email. And it is just a constant reminder of per day how much time am I spending. And since I've gone through this process and I've read fairly widely about how to use it wisely, there are all of these controls that are in place, even on the device themselves, if they're used. And then, you know, I know we talked a little bit earlier too about how many notifications is any one person getting in one day, and I would just say turn them all off and turn the banners off so there's no red badges on your phone, because that's also taking advantage of your neural network. You have a very hard time ignoring a red banner that tells you you've been contacted, no matter what the app is. And so I've even turned that off on my email, so that the only time I'm checking email is when I actually choose to open my email app on my phone, not when it shows me a banner or a push notification, which is all part of what Dr. Beasley talked about in taking advantage of the way our brains work in response to stimulus.
Kelly, when you talk to parents about policies in school, what do you hear from them, both in terms of, do people say, yes, please help us because it's a big fight at home and it'd be nice if somebody else said, okay, you can't do this at school? Do you hear that? And do you also hear from people about safety concerns? As you referenced, Luke, teenagers that are leaving campus during lunchtime, if you have a car accident or you need some help, you may need that phone. Do you hear concerns about emergencies? And how do you think about all those things and also teaching young people other ways of getting help if you don't have a cell phone, or if your cell phone breaks? Or my sister likes to carry paper maps in her car because she says, what if your cell phone quits? So you're not going to know where you're going. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things that people are not developing skills for because it's so readily available in an app.
Yeah, I think, yes, we are hearing from parents, although I would anticipate that once maybe a policy is officially put out there for a board vote, we would hear all of a sudden we will get significantly more input. And that's a good part of the public process.
Sure.
But, you know, we have, I have received emails from parents prior to initiating this work saying, go for it. It's really important. You need to address the bullying. You need to address students' time on task. Other states are doing it. Here's the data. We've received, you know, emails just sort of expressing their support for an individual school's policy. I imagine that most emails are going directly to principals, but sometimes they come up to us right now. You know, and one parent wrote, it said, it keeps my daughter and the other students focused, and she's very happy not to worry about people recording every potentially embarrassing mess up she could make. She knows she can get a hold of us by calling from the office if necessary. And I thought that parent brought up an important point that, you know, students' educational interactions may be compromised or hindered by fear of saying the wrong thing, right, in a classroom setting. I want students at a board member.
I hadn't even thought about that.
To be
recording someone to make fun of them later.
Right, exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
You said the wrong thing. You slipped up with your dates. You just used the wrong words. Mm. However, we've also received, you know, from a parent, you know, concerns that a ban over the lunch period, which I don't think I support, but if a ban were, you know, from bell to bell without an exception for high school students at lunch, it would push them to leave campus, additionally putting more kids out on icy roads and sidewalks. There have also been some concerns about it'll prevent students from communicating with parents in a timely manner about after-school activities. I do, as a parent, I believe that our front offices are really great about delivering messages, so I'm a little bit less concerned about that. more concerned about the consistent sort of dings and push notifications that are available to students. And then I think that there are parents who are genuinely concerned about the overall, you know, what happens if there is a terrible thing that happens at school. And I am not a safety and security expert, but I feel like I'm loosely aware that maybe you don't want a cell phone dinging and making sounds if you're supposed to be quiet and in a lockdown situation. So it's a valid concern.
A lot of different considerations there. So nuance is needed. Susan, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I can piggyback on that because I completely understand, like, let's say worst case scenario, some crisis in a school. As a mom, I understand the impulse to want to have immediate access to my child. And I know that school safety experts have actually put out statements that having every child connected to a cell phone in a crisis situation likely will increase the risk for those classrooms and those children, partially because of the noise. You know, dinging and notifications going off is not going to be increasing safety and may actually put kids at risk. And then on top of that, it's going to distract kids and potentially make it harder for them to hear important instructions from staff and teachers and emergency responders, and it could jam signals. And so I feel like that immediate access, while it may sort of allay parental fears, may actually be a detrimental move for childhood safety.
Well, and could also just do the opposite, too, just raise the parental fears and anxiety even higher because they can't really help in that moment.
Yeah, right.
They have
Absolutely.
To rely on school experts and the folks that are trained to help children get to safety. And so it does seem like it would be better if the children are really focused on the person in charge that's telling them how to get to a place safely. I want to go to the phones quickly, and then we'll pick it up again. David is in Petersburg. Hi, David.
Hey, good morning, Lori. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had a comment. I'm fully in support of the schools restricting the use of cell phones for kids. We've been kind of tracking this as part of a Rotary Youth Exchange program with foreign kids in our high schools. You know, for over 20 years, I've been watching this, and I definitely see the use of a cell phone causing distractions and also causing our inbound kids, the foreign kids that are in our own schools, spending a lot of time keeping track of their friends at home and what a distraction this is to their integration in our society. And so we've taken a strong stance, maybe not strong enough at some point, in restricting or trying to encourage the kids to stay off their phones and being part of the present rather than being connected to somebody at home. It gives them a lot firmer ground here in Alaska when they're staying here.
Yeah, important to be present and be connected locally instead of being in a place but still being more connected to someplace that you're not at the current time. Thank you for the call, David. And Susan, I know you wanted to pick up there too.
Sure. I had a couple of comments. One was that, you know, you think that kids would be universally opposed to these types of policies. But what research has shown is that while there's initial opposition, that once kids adjust and actually start to benefit from some of the more social and time availability, then they actually usually support these moves in this direction of more bans. And then I just wanted to piggyback on something that Luke said a little while ago, and going back to this concept of just sort of getting away from phones as sort of an escape, or I guess what I'm trying to hit on is that such an important part of adolescence is learning to cope through moments of difficulty and get through uncomfortable situations. And I feel like a big thing that phones do is that they provide sort of an easy exit or an escape, and they interrupt that process. Mm. And, that short-term safety or distraction can lead to actually decreased resilience. If you think about resilience being built from navigating difficult situations and then growing because
figuring
of
them out.
Having made it through.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really important piece that has to do with what Luke was talking about getting back to the fundamentals of really, you know, what are we doing in nurturing young people?
I wanted to come back to you, Luke, too. I know that you had some comments you wanted to make. And I wanted to ask you about the Windler Middle School principal has talked about a big decrease in fights and cyberbullying because of the cell phone ban at Windler. Have you seen similar types of decreases in negative exchanges between students in a similar fashion?
Yeah, I think so. I totally agree with Marcus. I think one thing I thought about earlier is we've had so many more requests to form lunchtime clubs. So if you think about it, this speaks to Susan's point just now. Once you experience what it's like to be human again and be fully present in the situation and feel safe and connected to those people who are around you, and you find a common interest and we can provide you space, then one of the things you can put in all of that time is some sort of interactive activity that's both low stakes but entertaining. And so the number of club requests have gone up, and you know, people like data always. And so we give the Climate and Connectedness Survey in the Anchorage School District every March. And the year over year difference in that climate survey, I think, sold the policy by itself, because the staff-student relationship metric, which is in that survey, which is the teacher's perception of the quality of their relationship with their kids, went up 13 percentage points. It was the single largest growth in the survey, and every single metric in students' feeling of safety and belonging at school went up from one year to the next. And then I could talk about test scores and a 50% reduction in suspension rates, and those are indirect ways of measuring just less interpersonal conflict, or if you want to be positive about it, kids now have a better way of dealing with conflict in person so that it doesn't escalate overnight and then result in a too late to do anything about it situation when they get to school the next day.
Well, this conversation is so fascinating that I almost blew past our second break, but we have to take that. So we'll be back after a short break. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are in the final minutes here of our discussion about cell phone policies in schools. And the evidence already, as Dr. Allman was talking about, that he's seen at South High, and positive engagement between students, less fights, and more calls for clubs. I love that. Dr. Beasley, I wanted to ask you about the risk to students' creative development, their own mind development. I remember seeing a study many years ago before cell phones about brain activity during television and how it's just sort of flatlined because everything's there. It's made for you. You don't have to create anything in your mind, as opposed to reading or having conversations. When I see children going down the road in a vehicle with screens in front of them, and I think, are they ever just looking out the window at the trees? What are your concerns about what happens, especially with very young children? I know a child of 8 that has their own cell phone. What are your concerns about how will they be able to develop their creative sense, which helps with problem solving and coming up with new ideas?
Yeah, that's a great question, Lori. And I think that we're sort of in the middle of a big experiment right now. And it's sort of a scary experiment where the stakes are really high. And yes, I think there are very many concerns about, you know, what we're lacking and what we're not providing. It's sort of we're taking away sort of free time of just where the brain can just sort of make connections in ways that we don't even understand, associations based on different interactions. And, you know, we don't know how creativity happens, but it doesn't happen, you know, when every moment is directed and accounted for, and certainly not when you're stuck in this dopamine loop. It likely happens in those sort of free association times when we're daydreaming or, you know, maybe crafting or doing something with our hands. Mm-hmm. And then there's obviously the piece that we've talked about, which is the social deprivation, where the more time we're spending focused on the screen, and even for teens, you know, in this sort of false world of increased connectivity, we are losing so much face-to-face
real
social,
connection.
Yeah, yes, connectedness real connection. That we know is detrimental. And there's direct correlations for, you know, kids who spend more time on screens, social media, gaming, just screen time in general, have more anxiety and depression and feelings of loneliness and isolation. And kids who are in more face-to-face synchronous group activities and family systems have better mental health.
Makes perfect sense that that real connection is real connection rather than that false sense of connection when you're just online and not really
and
talking to
pathologic comparison.
Let's go to the phones for just a quick minute here. Doreen is in Wasilla. Doreen, we're almost out of time, but we'd love to hear your thoughts.
Hey, good morning. Thank you so much for this topic. I'm really glad you're addressing it. I wanted to share a quick experience. I am a school psychologist. I was working in a high school a few years back. The troopers called, told us to go into lockdown because we had a potential dangerous person in the parking lot. So we were well trained, the students were well trained with our Alice drills. We went into lockdown, but then during the debrief we learned of some, you know, everybody's texting their parents, and we had a parent trying to get her daughter to jump out the window of the second story science room. And here the problem was in the parking lot, of course, so the teacher was dealing with basically, you know, the daughter and the parent, and it was crazy. We also had a parent that showed up at the building when we're all locked and barricaded in rooms, demanding that their daughter or son, I don't remember, be let out of the classroom. They were there to pick them up because of the situation. So it was just crazy. It was crazy. I don't think that it helps. I think the schools are trained on what to do at that time. Also, just quickly on lunchtime, I really think kids need to be interacting with each other, and if they have phones, that is what they are doing by and large. And I highly recommend The Anxious Generation. You may have talked about it. I might have missed that, but excellent book.
Well, thank you. I was going to ask we didn't get to the book, but there was an article in The Atlantic from last year. The headline said, "Get phones out of schools now." The subtitle said, "They impede learning, stunt relationships, and lessen belonging. They should be banned." The article was written by Jonathan Haidt, a social psychologist. Is he right? Would all of you prefer just a straight-up ban and just not deal with it at all at school?
Absolutely. Luke? Yeah. If I could go completely silent, yeah.
You would like to just have them leave them at home?
Yeah. I think learning would be so much more efficient, and we would have more well-adjusted human beings, to put it shortly.
I would nod my head, but from a pragmatic standpoint, one thing I've learned now in 3+ years on the board is that we don't have magic wands, and we do need to deal with life as it comes at us, and with nuance and attention and sensitivity. So hopefully we can do the best we can for as many students and community members as we can.
Yes, and Susan, you as well. What are your thoughts there?
Sure. I think I said up front that, I mean, I agree that there are some logistical challenges, but yes, I think in terms of if we're putting children's health and learning first, we would have policies that banned phone use from bell to bell. And I'd also like to just make a little plug for anybody that's interested in digging into the research on this. There is an open source Google Doc put together by Jonathan Haidt. And if there's a way I can
provide a link
to that.
Yes, we can put that
anybody
on the
that's
Talk
interested can look, and I'll provide that link.
That would be great. We'll do that. And I'm grateful that Doreen called in right at toward the end of the program to remind us that there are experts at schools. And of course, I understand parental anxiety. If something bad is happening, you're scared, you want your child out. But as she relayed, best to trust people to handle the situation. And the phones can get in the way. Thank you so much to my guest today, Dr. Luke Allman, the South High School principal. Dr. Susan Beasley is a pediatric behavioral health pediatrician at Mindful Growth Alaska. And Kelly Lessons was with us today, and Kelly is an Anchorage School Board member. Thanks so much to our engineer, Chris Hyde, our producer, Madeline Rose, and on the phones, Joseph Hansen helped us out today. We'll be back next week, and we'll be back tonight at 9 p.m. for live election coverage. We'll hopefully see you then or talk with you then. Thanks for listening today. I'm Lori Townsend.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.